Okay. And to help us understand some of the things going on in the world of Silicon Valley and the extremism of the tech people, the so-called broligarchs, there's no one better than our guest tonight, Gil Duran. And he is a San Francisco-based writer and political communications expert. Many of you know of him. Some of you have been, Gil, people have been asking to have you as a guest for some time. And he, in the past, was a spokesman and strategist for California politicians, including Kamala Harris when she was attorney general. And then he returned to journalism at the Sacramento Bee and the San Francisco Examiner. And he writes a very important newsletter. I urge you all to subscribe to it, called The Nerd Reich. It focuses on tech politics and extremism, that particular brand of extremism. And he's writing a book called The Nerd Reich: Silicon Valley Fascism and the War on Global Democracy. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, of course, I've been relying on your writings for a long time to understand this world of very powerful people who are profoundly anti-democratic. And think and act at a very high level. I think it's just been invaluable to have your experience, your expertise. So I would really like to hear about the book you're writing. I'm sure many of us present would like to hear about it.
Sure. Well, the Nerd Reich, Silicon Valley Fascism and the War on Democracy traces the evolution of this ideology of cyber-libertarianism, which has now curdled into tech fascism in our current era. And it looks at a small cultish group of venture capitalists, most of them connected to a guy named Peter Thiel, that have risen to positions of great wealth, power, and influence in our society, and are now pushing this very cohesive set of ideas that call for the overthrow of democracy and for the institution of a sort of corporate dictatorship where nation states like the United States no longer exist and where they are free from regulations and laws, or else are creating the regulations and the laws. And that's sort of what the book is about. And I kind of stumbled into it in San Francisco politics. I was covering the elections in 2021 and 2022. There were these elections to recall four politicians in San Francisco. And it was there where I first started to recognize that there was something very strange going on with Silicon Valley politics, because as someone who spent most of my career as a Democratic political strategist in California at the highest levels for all the top politicians, was never on a losing campaign. A lot of these guys were claiming to be Democrats, but I could tell they were not. Everything they were arguing was against everything that mainstream Democrats like Jerry Brown, Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, Dianne Feinstein have been fighting for decades. And that was where I first got the inkling that something was wrong. And it took me a while to figure it out.
So you're in the, I mean, do you want to talk about some of the protagonists of the book? Because there's, as you said, there's a lot of confusion about the idea of, you're called a corporate dictatorship, the idea of network states. And can you explain that? Because that is a
Sure.
concept that's very, it's very foreign. We've been through many, I'm a historian, so we've been through many phases of the organization of sovereign territories, but this is something altogether different.
Sure. Well, today's a really good day because the Financial Times just published a big story that actually focuses on the network state, and for the first time in the Financial Times explains it. And that was a big hallelujah moment for me, because I've really been pushing the mainstream media to pay attention to this. I know as a journalist myself why they want to avoid weird stories like that, but this has gone far beyond just a bunch of people talking. It's they're investing in trying to create these weird cities around the world. And how I first found out about it was in San Francisco. One of the main people trying to recall these Democratic politicians was a guy named Gary Tan, and he's a venture capitalist, and he just started becoming a really loud voice calling for a draconian tough on crime approach in San Francisco, even though crime was at the lowest level it had been in decades. San Francisco is actually a very safe city, very few murders compared to a lot of red states where crime is very high, where violence is very high. And in watching Gary Tan, who was this supposed Democrat that had all these Republican ideas he was pushing, it came to my attention and to the attention of others that he kept talking about this thing called the network state and this thing called effective accelerationism. And these tech guys say a lot of weird stuff. And so at first I ignored it, didn't really pay much attention to it. But then in 2022, there was this thing called the Network State Conference, and Gary Tan spoke at the Network State Conference. And at the conference, he explained his political takeover efforts in San Francisco, which were successful. All of the politicians they were targeting got pushed out of office in this sort of frenzied panic over we have to punish these politicians because they're ruining the city. And he explained it as part of the network state ideology. And there was an activist here. There is an activist here named Emily Mills who was doing these long Twitter threads about this. And, you know, I had ignored it for a while, but then I realized that maybe I should look into the network state thing. Flash forward a month, and I'm reading the New York Review of Books because I read it every month. And they had a review of a book by a historian named Quinn Slobodian called Crack Up Capitalism. And as I was reading this book, I was actually in the hot tub at my condo complex. I literally got up and was like, I have to go get this book right now and read it. And I got it that night and I read it. And in it, it explains this entire movement to create these zones and has a whole section about this thing called the network state. And that was really where my work began, where I realized I can't ignore this weird stuff they're talking about. So, in a nutshell, the network state, you can think of it as a cult. It's a cult of very powerful and wealthy people who have this concentrated idea that in the 21st century, technology is going to basically collapse the economy by sucking all of the jobs and revenue out of the general economies of nation states and democracies. And in that collapse, there'll be chaos and violence, and nation states will just be over with, that they're not going to survive the 21st century. And their plan is to create these privatized cities in advance where they can go and start their own countries for when the nation states collapse. And not only do they believe the nation states will collapse, but they also believe it's their job to help make them collapse. This is where the idea of accelerationism comes into play. They believe capitalism must accelerate toward maximum destruction, and that's the only way we're going to get the innovation we need to become an AI-enhanced, transhuman, not non-dying multiplanetary species that is also a fascist species. So, the more I looked, the more I started to see that there was this kind of cabal of interconnected people. A guy named Balaji Srinivasan wrote a book in 2022 called The Network State: How to Start a New Country. He's sort of a main guru of this whole movement. Joe Lonsdale, part of the PayPal mafia, Peter Thiel, sort of the granddaddy of them all. David Sacks, who is now Trump's crypto and AI czar, was one of the main voices in the San Francisco recall election. So this whole cast of characters, and the final thing I'll say before I let you ask a little more is that I came to realize after all of this guff with Gary Tan, he ended up getting drunk and tweeting "die slow, motherfuckers" at the Board of Supervisors, and he got in a bunch of trouble for that, and you know, recriminations. But Gary Tan started his career at Palantir, and he actually designed the Palantir logo. And so I was like, how did I not know this from the beginning? But like a lot of journalists, I'm just reporting on the story that was in front of me, on the politics of the day. And when I finally took a breath and looked deeply into it, I saw there was something much deeper going on here.
Well, that's a lot, and it also lays out it can. I'm sure that parts of what you've said are familiar to many people, but the key thing that Gil is giving us is the big picture here. So, is Greenland? You know how they keep talking about Greenland, and I what I know is, they're foreign. I use a lot of air quotes these days. I know it's annoying to some people, sorry, but foreign policy. It's about plundering minerals and plundering the earth, right? We know the oil, minerals. So I've always looked with a a cynical eye on that part for Greenland. But is Greenland supposed to be a territory where they're going to have one of these network states?
That has been proposed by a guy named Dryden Brown, who's the head of something called Praxis. Praxis is a proposed tech city of about 500,000 people, I think, that they were originally going to build in the Mediterranean, and then it switched to Greenland, and then they were looking in the Dominican Republic, and now they're looking at Vandenberg Air Force Base in Santa Barbara, and now they're in South Africa claiming they're going to solve white genocide. So I'm starting to take Praxis a little less seriously. But this guy, Dryden Brown, who's like 30 years old, he claims to have $525 million in financing to build this thing. And the investors include Mark Andreessen, Peter Thiel, Sam Altman of OpenAI, the Winklevoss twins. But he was sort of raising the idea that he's going to build it on Greenland. I'm not sure if he has the power to do that. But Greenland, with all the resources it has there, the rare earths, and also the fact that climate change is going to melt a lot of the ice and make it an inhabitable land, that's definitely why they want it. They see it as an amazing new sort of continent where they can colonize it and take it. Yeah. And it'll be a place that in the era of climate change is a better zone to be in. And so here we are threatening one of our NATO allies with military aggression to steal it. So even if it's not Praxis, I have no doubt that these corrupt tech people will be in on the deal. And the way things are organized now, it seems to be like you can do whatever you want as long as you cut the Trump family in on the deal. Yeah. And that's very much what's going on.
And I've had for a while in my writings, you know, there are different ways to define authoritarianism, but given what's been going on, one of the ones definitions I've been using a lot is that it's about taking away the rights of the many, curtailing or taking them away, and giving unheard of liberties and freedoms to the very few, and allowing them to plunder anything, the environment, the workforce, with impunity. And from what I've read about the network state, the appeal is that they think they're going to have these territories in which it's beyond any laws. Is this correct?
Beyond the laws of democracy. They'll have their own laws intended to keep other people out, but no more democracy, no more regulation.
Yeah. Okay. And the other thing I've been personally, and everyone here at Lucid knows, I've been, you know, really, really worried since in November, actually, before Trump came in. When I heard that Musk was going to be, he was part of the campaign and he had moved to Mar-a-Lago, I got very worried about this private citizen interfering. And then I have been tracking very closely what I've called a new kind of coup, where, I want to know what you think of this, and that normally the oligarch autocrat relationship, the whole point is that the oligarch is out of the government in private. So they buy up, you know, banks, they buy up media properties, and there's that partnership. But I have never heard of, and I would like to know whether you are just missing something. I've never heard of a private individual. Yes, he was given a temporary government status, but allowed to infiltrate a sovereign power and take hold of sensitive financial and payment systems and other data, and essentially build a kind of, have these like digital shock troops. So that's why I call it a new kind of coup, and essentially build a private or parallel civil service that's loyal to him, the private individual inside the government. And this is DOGE. And, you know, the media was covering DOGE. It's a little bit like too much been the great man of history. As long as Musk was there and he was like a co-leader, I've written about this too. He was a co-leader. Time put him on the cover behind the desk in the Oval Office. He was meeting, speaking. That was also totally unheard of. I study autocrats, never heard of that happening before. And as soon as Musk said he was stepping back, the media lost interest. Whereas what's happened, in fact, is DOGE has become entrenched in dozens and dozens of federal agencies, even probably 100 now. And nobody is really, except for Wired and a few other publications, been interested anymore in this. And I'd like to know, is this, in your opinion, something that's new? Because I see this as a way that the US is being used as a kind of test tube or laboratory for a new form of autocracy that's perhaps connected to the things that you've been describing.
Oh, definitely. The idea for DOGE comes out of the work of Curtis Yarvin, who in 2009 wrote that there should be a government where the authoritarian-like president is elected through democratic means, seizes power, and then installs sort of a CEO to run the government. That way, the CEO is completely authorized, gets his hands dirty, and the president acts like a chairman of the board. And in 2022, actually, he updated the idea to something he called the butterfly revolution, where he spelled out that, this new CEO dictator would bring these ninjas, young people who were like loyal only to him, to go throughout government, tearing things apart and, like gremlins on the wing of an airplane. And he called it RAGE, retire all government employees, right? And there's a speech of him on YouTube in 2012 laying this out. He's been on this for years. And here comes Musk with DOGE, right? The Department of Government or Efficiency, which I prefer to call destruction of government by Elon. But it's not just Elon, right? And it's not just the people. They are doing a massive data heist and unleashing his own proprietary AI systems in government. And no one has eyes on that. We don't know what they're doing or how they're going to use it. But in a way, that's what Musk got for his money, right? He bought the ability to take this position. Of course, the saving grace is that he's an egomaniac and a megalomaniac. And you can't get two of those type of people together because they're going to butt heads. And so he eventually flames out of the position and tries to take way too much power, overdoes it a bit, and then leaves by saying that Trump is in the Epstein files. And but now they've kind of bridged the they've had a detente recently. But yeah, this is something new, and it comes from Curtis Yarvin. By the way, the network state idea also originally comes from Curtis Yarvin. He wrote about it in an essay called Patchworks in 2008, where the nation state should be broken up into corporate patchworks that would have total surveillance. Everything you do, even in your own home, would be visible to the authority. This is basically him reinventing Orwell's Big Brother. And poor people would be turned into biodiesel, potentially, to run the city buses, or else, he said, because nobody would want to live in a city where the buses were run on biodiesel made from humans, they would be locked into virtual reality cells with headsets, so they would be out of the way. And so this is the person kind of creating these ideas. What the network state did was take Yarvin's crazy ideas and put them into a sort of venture capital pitch deck version of it. But it's amazing the degree to which this crazy blogger, unemployed blogger from San Francisco, who by his own admission was using tremendous amounts of LSD during this period of his life, wrote up this manifesto that is now being imposed on us by the wealthiest people in the world. And that's part of the story that my book will tell that unfortunately has not been told by the mainstream outlets. And it's out there. I mean, you can find this stuff. I've been digging through interviews, etc., and it's not a mystery. But that's where those ideas come from. It is new. And the good news is these guys are kind of amateurs. So while it's scary and they've done a lot of damage, they've also made a lot of mistakes. If I were handling the authoritarian takeover of a country, if I was on the team that was trying to destroy the United States, it would be much more professional. It would be handled, they're in a way, they're ridiculous clowns on drugs, and they're ruining everything for themselves. So I do think they're going to fail in this particular iteration. And I always say that because the stuff I talk about is really dark, and I don't want to demoralize people. I want to energize people. But this is a long-term project, and even if the Trump thing fails, they will regroup and they will come back in another form. And I feel like they'll have a lot better success getting what they want over time with a compliant Democratic Party than they will with the clown bath that is the Trump administration. Because I think they're trying to go too far too fast, and they're sinking in the polls. And that's bad news for them, unless they plan to go full authoritarian. And I'm not quite sure Trump has the energy to do that. JD Vance, maybe.
Yeah, that was so. Let me just check the time. So you see there are a lot of hands up. I did want to mention Vance. I'm glad you mentioned him because I know that he is the creation of Peter Thiel, right? He Thiel bankrupt. I would say bankrupt instead of bankrolled because he's such a bankrupt person. I've done this mistake so many times. He bankrolled both his Senate race and Vance's private businesses. It's important for people to know. So Vance, as vice president, is there. He's there by the will of these people, as well as he's the connection. He's like the connective tissue with, Christians, with all the different stakeholders. Project 2025. He wrote the preface to Kevin Roberts' book. So he's everywhere. But what I wanted to ask you is that my impression is that, he wasn't a good choice, Vance, because he's very unlikable and he's unelectable if they're going to try and put him up in 2028. And this gets to your question, are they going to go full authoritarian? Because I don't see him ever being able to be elected in a free and fair election. And that would hamper, not having, they've chosen the wrong horse to back in a sense. By putting their hopes on Vance. What do you think of that?
I do think he has a really uphill battle in an election. I think their best hope would be for Trump to stroke out, for Vance to get in there with enough time to declare some kind of emergency and try to use his powers to end elections. I do think Vance is more dangerous than Trump. I think he would do anything.
Yes.
I think he's all in. He's completely an ideologue. I even think his conversion to Catholicism is fake and just a part of his
Yes.
political deal making, because I was born Catholic, and there's this thing with these converts who start quoting medieval texts and being super aggressive militants, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, that's not how anybody I know who's a Catholic talks. They talk about Jesus, they talk about the Virgin Mary. They don't talk about whatever fascist you're quoting from the past. So, but I do think J.D. Vance is a man who will do anything. He's a man of many faces. He was a
Yeah.
completely different person when he first rose to national prominence with Oprah as the chubby-cheeked, moderate-coded hillbilly elegy guy, right? And he has, and when he said Trump was like Hitler and opium and had no moral authority to be president. And now he has become the aggressive attack dog for Trump. And so Vance is very dangerous, but I think unless something happens to Trump, he has an uphill battle. And then to the earlier point, this is part of the thing where they make some bad choices because they're so greedy for power. They
Yeah.
literally have to have Peter Thiel's intern as the vice president. And the degree to which, I should say too, that not only did Thiel bankroll his businesses and his political campaign, if you look closely enough, Vance says that Thiel is the reason he converted to Catholicism. And
Oh,
by the
interesting.
way, at the same time that he converted to Catholicism, he converted to Trumpism. And tell me, who finds God and MAGA at the same time? Right? So
Yeah.
he's cooked up in a lab. He's dangerous, but I think he would have a hard time getting elected. But I don't think him getting elected is necessarily the plan. I don't think that there's a plan to get Trump out of there. I think Trump is very aware that they want him out of the way. But if they get the opportunity, and with Trump like falling asleep all the time, they might. So.
No, that makes sense. If you're just joining us, this was a fascinating conversation with Gil Duran, and I urge everybody to subscribe to his Nerd Reich newsletter, which talks is an expert in these tech extremists. And there are not too many people who really understand what is going on. And some of these characters make it difficult on purpose for you to understand what they're doing. And so now we're going to stop recording because we have reached our half an hour.